Now, the only other submitter I have on my list for today is Nathan Surin Dran. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Not sure how long you've been here, but I've said this to every submitter, so I'll say it to you. We've read your original submission, so thank you for the time you've taken to put that together. We don't need you to read that out to us, because we've already read it. We also don't need you to even read particular paragraphs, because we've read it. But if you want to highlight the key points that you think you want to emphasise to us, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll start with a provocative statement, which is that it's actually a quotation that says that it's difficult to get a person to understand something when their income depends on them not understanding it. There's a man walking by a river, and he is enjoying the scenery and looking around, and he hears a baby cry, and he looks around and he sees this baby in the water struggling to keep its head above water, so he dives in and rescues it. As he's pulling it out onto the bank and gasping for breath as he crawls out onto the bank, he hears another cry and he looks around, there's another baby in the water, so he jumps in and rescues it, pulls it out onto the bank, and this process is repeated time and time again. Over the last 200 years, we've been through a period of economic expansion, which is doing more with more. We've had more resource throughput in our economy as a result of more energy expenditure to access those resources. Over the last 40 years or so, since the oil shocks of the 1970s, we've been through a period of doing more with less, hopefully, trying to decouple our economic activity from resource expenditure. Going forwards, my contention is that energy constraints will mean that we are doing less with less. Underlying all GDP activity is energy expenditure. And allowing continued economic activity are our ecosystems. In that sense, the economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment. The assumptions that are apparent in the Land and Water Plan are really an insufficient basis in light of the evidence that I've referred to in my submission with regard to a realistic view of the future that would underlie a plan which allowed us to actually shift to transition away from the current economic activity that we have undertaken and that we've developed over time to something more appropriate. I included in my submission a couple of quotations from a guy called David Corton, who used to be with the World Bank. He's an economist, and he tells two stories. There's the story for a dying earth, where we have sacred money and markets, and time is money. And then we have the story for a living earth, which is sacred life and living, and time is life. When you start to include the externalized costs of our economic activity, it can be shown that much of what we do is not economic. And there is work that's been done by ecological economists here in New Zealand that shows that that applies to the dairy industry. So just going back to our man for a minute, walking by the river and rescuing babies, my suggestion, the point of my submission, I guess, is that we take a journey upstream and forget about the busyness of rescuing the babies, and look at who's throwing them in. A realistic view of future limits on GDP activity actually tells quite a hopeful story from an environmental impact perspective. As contraction in all liquids energy supply sets in, we will see fundamental market-led responses to these constraints. And we have two choices at this point. We can either choose to ignore those limits that are forthcoming and be dragged kicking and screaming towards a resource-constrained future, which we inevitably face, or we can be proactive, get ahead of the curve, and actually choose, through our economic activity choices, to move away from this. I would like this process to try to integrate an energy futures perspective. I was in Wellington recently at a meeting with the Wise Response Society had convened with the Ministry for the Environment, and there was Bryce Johnson from Fish and Game, Sir Geoffrey Palmer was there, and our chair, Sir Alan Mark. And at that meeting, Geoffrey Palmer was suggesting that in terms of getting this futures thinking embedded within government, it has to be devolved to the individual ministries and actually out to the regional authorities and the territorial authorities, and that we need to put time and effort into understanding the future. Now, there's some of this work has been done through the emergency management work that's been done around risks and so on, but this is much more broad than just an emergency management. This is a long emergency of resource depletion, climate change and other environmental impacts, biogeophysical flows of nutrients and so on. And there are frameworks and methodologies globally, such as building community resilience, agroecological techniques, which hold part of the answer, as does the economic opportunity around carbon farming, which again, creating carbon permanent carbon sinks as regenerated native forest has multiple benefits, and forward-thinking farmers in the region could actually choose to go in that direction to as part of this process. So I guess my question is, if continued dependence on a finite resource, that is the diesel, the phosphate, the urea from natural gas, is a dead end, then how much further down this dead end path do we go before we make the proactive decision to turn around and come back within the Earth's limits? I open myself to any questions.
Thank you for that. Our task as a panel is effectively to say yes or no with reasons to particular changes to the notified plan that submitters have asked for. You haven't actually asked for any particular changes to be made, so I'm trying to understand your submission in terms of that. Are these issues that you're asking the council to bear in mind as it goes forward with future planning processes?
I have done that through submissions to the long-term planning process, right, to the land transport plan, etc. In the context, I guess, of the water and land plan and planning activities, I'm questioning the underlying assumptions that are driving the view of the future which this plan is planning towards. And so I'm asking you to undertake a futuring exercise of some description that will give you a more realistic view of the biophysical constraints that we face that would enable us to actually plan for a future that can happen. In the in my submission, I said at the start that there's a section in the plan which says, from the preamble, Southland has a diverse range of highly productive land uses that contribute to the region's prosperity and will likely for the foundation of further growth and expansion. The ongoing intensification of land use, both urban and rural, brings challenges to the environment, blah, blah, blah. Those assumptions are false assumptions on the basis of the biophysical limits, particularly energy supply, which we face going forwards. And if you're planning for a future that cannot happen, then you're wasting ratepayers' money on plans which have no basis in reality.
All right, thank you for that. I'll see if we have any questions of you, Morris.
Well, just further to the chairman's question, really, what we need are some specific words to consider so that we might put into the plan. And unless you make those, it's hard for us to be able to you know, put your ideas into the plan.
Okay. Specific words. I mean, so the plan itself is not fit for purpose on the basis that I've just outlined. And as a result, the future that we're planning towards, you know, isn't going to happen. So I'm questioning the entirety of the process rather than any specific aspect of the plan.
Yeah.
And I don't see, there was no other opportunity given prior to the plan draft being created and all that thousands and thousands of man hours that have gone into that work, you know, all of which is good work within the, you know, terms of reference that have been given, but I'm questioning the terms of reference.
No, I understand that. Thank you.
No, I have no questions.
Edward, any questions in terms of that philosophical?
No, I think you've outlined it quite well. It's hard for us to take it from the high level, bring it down. Because I think a lot like you and that high level, but I think for this, if we've got something wrong, we actually need to know where to actually take the plan, and that's where I think we're struggling with the detail.
So I guess what I'll try again. So what I'm saying in terms of and what I said in the towards the end of my submission, how might this guide policy and governance of the land, air and water commons that we all must share? One fundamental change that seems obvious in light of the above is that we need to work policy to affect change to the way we farm and order our economic affairs rather than just managing their effects. So what I'm saying there, and I go on to give a couple of examples, is there are lots of ways in which farming could change towards a lower resource throughput future. It's incumbent, and it's actually part of the regional council's responsibility under its resource management act, to educate about the ways in which this can be done. And what I'm suggesting is that perhaps rather than being the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, that the council becomes the fence at the top.
No, I think you made your point quite clearly. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have no further questions of clarification, okay. But thank you for the time that you've obviously taken to put your thoughts down on paper for us to consider. We really appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.